when I give you the mic, you gotta go with it. That's free jazz. Did y'all hear me? When I give you the mic, just go with it. It is free jazz, and like Planet Fitness, a judgment-free zone. All right? Come on with the rhythm. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This, a little bit louder. Ooh, yeah. I'm gonna let it shine, let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. Now watch this. I did say that. Music is a full body experience, right? So that means if you're singing and you're standing in one place, all of your body hadn't gotten there yet. So I kind of need to see a little rock, a little dip, something. There you go. I like this right here. All right, let's try it again. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it. Just give me some rhythm. Oh, this little light of mine. Yeah, this little light of mine. Gonna let it
shine, let it shine, let it shine.
Give me the drums, come on. Is your body into it yet? Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Can we take them on the road, Ross? We can. All right. All right. Let's do this one. The words are, when you see me running, I got it on my mind. When you see me running, I got it on my mind. When you see me running, I've got it on my mind. I've got justice on my mind. Okay? And it goes, when you see me running, I got it on my mind. When you see me running, got it on my mind. When you see me running, got it on my mind. I've got justice on my mind. When you see me running, I said, when you see me running, when you see me running, I've got justice on my mind.
Singing, I got it on my mind. When you hear me singing, I got it on my mind. Settle
that's what the life's blood of the movement sounds like and it feels like. That's what you're supposed to feel in your movements. If you don't feel your whole body being completely energized, revamp your music. Am I right? Revamp your music. Music is not the entertainment. It's not the pre-show. It's not the warm-up. There is no liberation without music. There is no liberation without music. You can forget it. There's no movement without music. When you walk into your meetings, bring the music. Don't wait for it. Bring it. Bring it. Bring the music with you. And that way, you know it's there. Right? You're not depending on somebody else to bring it. You know it's there. Okay, how about this? Oye, mi gente, traemos la fuerza. La libertad es mi única bandera. Come on, let's push it. Oye, mi gente, traemos la fuerza. Mi única bandera. I almost believe you. I almost believe you. Because if we're being called to rise up in this moment, we can't be lazy about rising, right? And we're being called to rise. Here's what we're saying in this movement. It's not enough to be woke. Being woke is just one part of it. My mama used to wake us all the time for school. But it wasn't until we got up that she was satisfied or we were safe. So we're being called to rise up. Yeah, 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 get woke. Get woke, get woke, but it's not the waking, it is the rising. And so if we're calling on eagles and condors to rise up, let's push it. So band, can we pick it up just a little bit and push it a little bit harder? And so that's gonna require, again, what I said to you, that full body experience, because that's what music is, full body. You're throwing your bodies up against a system and you refuse. You refuse to stop throwing your body against this system until you get results. Oye, mi gente, traemos la fuerza. La libertad es mi única bandera. Rise up, my people, my condors, my ego. No human being will ever be illegal. Look at this baby. Look at this baby. With her whole body in it. Ain't no shame in her game. Look at me and tell me, is she illegal? Can she ever be illegal? Does she deserve to be caged? Then you have to raise your voice for her. You want to try it again? Here we go. Oye, mi gente, traemos la fuerza. La libertad es mi única bandera. Rise up, my people, my condors, my eagles. No human being will ever be illegal. the music. No human being will ever be illegal. No human being will ever be illegal. One more time. No human being will ever be illegal. So that was the Peace Poets. And here's something else they said. They said, I have not come here alone. I carry my people in my bones. Right. Now, do you see why that has to be a full body experience? Because if you don't engage your whole self, then you leave your ancestors out. Because that's how we carry our ancestors in our bones. So I want you to get somebody on your mind who's not here. Somebody who was in this fight. Somebody who probably should still be in this fight. You got that person? And I want you to bring them in this full body experience. I have not come here alone. I carry my people in my bones. I have not come here alone. And if you listen, you can hear them in my soul. You got it? I have not come here alone. I carry my people in my bones.
That's it. That's it.
I have not come here.
That's it. That's it. Say it, children. Put those hands together while you're singing. Come on.
I have not come here alone. I carry my people in my bones. I have not come here alone. And if you listen, you can hear them in my soul. I have not.
Can't you hear them, children? Oh, yes.
You got somebody?
Why don't you say it, children? I carry them in my bones.
Again, I have not come here alone. I carry my people in my bones. I have not come here alone. And if you listen, you can. can hear. Now, I don't want any clapping and no music, okay? Because we said if you listen, you can hear them in my soul. Here we go. And if you listen, hear them in my soul. If you listen, listen, you can And if you listen, you can hear them in my soul. If you listen, you can hear them in my soul. And if you listen, hear them in my... Can we take it down just a little bit? If you listen, you can... Come on, keep it going, keep it going. If you listen, you can hear them in my soul. Last time. And if you listen, you can hear them in my soul.
Everybody, grab somebody by the hand, right where you are. As the musicians play soft, come on, come up under that softly, come up under that. As Yara has led us into this place of reflection and this place of deep spirituality, and when you get ready to sit down, I want everybody to fill up the pews from the front back, you know, so we sit in the front seats because we fought for them, right? And we're saying that this issue of poverty has got to be on the front benches. Issue of racism, dealing with it finally. It's got to be at the front. Fixing immigration. It can't be on the side. It got to be at the front, right? Dealing with the war economy on the front. And so as we hold hands, come on, musicians, in that, just play underneath there for me. Now, first thing I want you to do, because there are thousands of people looking at us online right now, thousands, thousands, thousands across the nation. I want you to first call out any name of any person in your family, freedom fighter, that is gone on, but you can hear them in your bones because you carry them there. And some of them died far too young, early. You know, yesterday was the anniversary of those four girls being blown up in a church. They should be here with us right now, physically, but they're here in our bones, in our spirit. So there are people, call their names right now. William Barber Sr., Charles Barber, Martin, Rosa, Viola Wusa, Martin, Rabbi Heschel, James Reed. Now, while we're here in this moment, everybody remember the 23 that were murdered here in El Paso. First, they were killed by violent words. And then they were killed by violent policies. And then those words and policies turned into violent acts. And we are the ones that must rise now and say no more. But remember those who were killed, because we got to carry them, y'all. We got to carry them. And Pastor Grady is here. His daughter wasn't killed, but she was shot and almost died. Remember those that were wounded and are still right now trying to recover. They would be here tonight with us if it wasn't for these violent words and violent policies and violent acts. Yeah, and remember those, yeah, that have died through violence, different names, other mass shootings. See, if we remember them, we'll never quit fighting. Some of you don't know, this is the 40th year of the Klan massacring people on TV in Greensboro, North Carolina. And one of the persons that was there when the shooting went on, his three five people from me. You don't ever know who's in the room with you. She was there when the police and the Klan participated on TV and murdered people. And she hadn't quit, and her friends hadn't quit, because you carry them in your bones. Okay. Now, this is the tough one. Can we remember those who have been so deadened in their spirits because of racism that they need deliverance? They need a resurrection. Even our enemies, they need a resurrection. If we rise right, some of them gonna change. If we stand right, some of our enemies will become our friends, because some of them have been so confused by fear and misused and abused and played against one of people. And if we rise and they see a family of people of all different races, some of them are gonna say, I don't want this no more. If I didn't believe that, I'd throw away my preaching robe tomorrow. Now, as you prepare to sit down, so that folk all over the country can see how much we are family. We're not just a rally. We're a campaign. We are family. Find at least one other person and make a fuss over them. That means hug them, shake them, love them, tell them, I'm going to carry you in my bones all my life and on and on and on, because I love you and I need you. Tell them, I need you. I need you in this movement. I need you. I need you. I need you, man. I need you. I need you. I don't even know if the band knows it. I need you to survive. There's an old gospel song. They may not know it. Come on. Make a fuss over them and find your seat then. And if your pocketbook's in the back, bring it up here. I need you to survive. I need you to survive. I need you to survive. I need you. You need me. We're all a part of God's body. Stand with me. Agree with me. We're all a part of God's body. It is His that every need be supplied. Help me, rah-rah. Some of you get on the right side, so from the front, the right and the left. Don't let any seats be between you. Come on. I need some folk on the right side. I need you. You need... Anybody know that? Come on. We're all a part of God's body. Me. Agree with me. Of God's Friday, it is His will that every need be supplied. We're all done to me. I need you to survive. I want to ask everybody from the blue shirts back, if you'd move on this side right behind my man. Everybody in the blue shirts back, would you come on the right side? Cameras, keep the... Don't do that. They said don't do that. Why don't do that? Oh, cameras. Okay. I'm sorry. I apologize. I didn't know. Hallelujah. All right. Are they all right? Okay. They said y'all need to move back. So y'all scoot over. Now, don't y'all be showing the cameras on the right side, right? Y'all not taking shots of the right side, okay. All right, because this is the prep rally. Now, at this time, somebody shout forward together. Not one step back. And we want to ask right now our host pastor if he would come and bring us greetings, Reverend Dr. Phil Daughtry. Would y'all put your hands together for him and welcome him tonight?
Good evening. I'm Phil Daughtry. Someone has just given me a doctorate that I had nothing to at earning. But I'm keeping this piece of paper just to show everybody. I'm Phil Doherty, the rector of All Saints Episcopal Church here in El Paso. Delighted that you are here for the second time in about 6 or 7 weeks. It's been great hosting you, and so pleased. When people visit All Saints, I say welcome, and the next time you come, I will say welcome home. So for some of you, I may be saying welcome home tonight. So glad you're here. We're also pleased to have with us the canon to the ordinary here in the Diocese of the Rio Grande. His name is Reverend Lee Curtis, and he brings greetings from the diocese.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, sir.
Buenas noches y bienvenidos a todos a esta su iglesia episcopal de Todos los Santos. Es mi honor, en parte de nuestro obispo, Michael Hun, estar con ustedes. Y está bien que estamos en la iglesia de Todos los Santos cuando recordamos todos los santos que nos acompañan en el camino para justicia y para la paz. Good evening to all of you, and welcome to this Church of All Saints. On behalf of Bishop Michael Hun, it is my joy and my honor to bring you greetings from the Diocese of the Rio Grande. And how fitting that we are in this Church of All Saints this evening as we remember those and carry with us those who have gone before in this fight for justice and for peace.
Now, I was taught in the church down in North Carolina that when the pastor comes forth and gives you a welcome, you give it back to him in a big way. Come on, give it back to him in a big way. Especially since Bishop Michael Curry is my homeboy, and the Episcopal Church from the beginning has been a number one supporter of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a moral revival. So we are glad to those who are joining us online. I want you all to help me educate tonight. This is the pre-rally, right, for Wednesday. So let's say we are here for the beginning of the MORE tour. We must do more. Mobilizing, organizing, registering, educating people for the movement. Who vote? We're building power and changing the narrative. We want to be very clear about what this is. This is the historic beginning of a 25-state tour that's beginning right here in El Paso, Texas. I'll introduce her in just a moment. But we welcome all who are gathered here, who have come, and all of you by line. Eric, keep us mindful of who's online with us, and every now and then send me a note of people that are listening from different places so I can give them a shout out. We know that not only is what we hear important, but a picture is worth a thousand words. So right now we want our technician, Clinton, to lift up a video that we want to share all over the nation so that people can see what is going on in this movement and the power that is being built for such a time as this.
Bishop Barbara Othrill, I'm sure you hear this all the time. Those who oppose programmatic responses to poverty generally will say, well, this is something the churches should be doing, that this should be a matter of charity. It should not be a role for government. What do you say to that?
Without cursing?
Yes, please.
Okay, let's go. We start on time. We start on time.
We're going to jump right into the forum.
Because if you're not in the narrative, you're never going to be in the policies. If you're not in the narrative, you're never going to be in the policies.
Give the people what they want.
We organized this forum to shed light on the realities.
We don't want to ask a limited question. One issue is not what's wrong with America.
The immigration issue and fear of a brown wave is a much more potent issue than even 60 million white Americans in poverty. What do you do about that?
There are 40 million more white people that are poor and low wealth than there are black. And we put this map up in a predominantly white audience, and one guy said,
what are you going to do to end this war economy?
There were 26 debates in 2016, and not one debate, 1 hour, was on poverty. We need some debate where we address systemic racism, policy racism, poverty, ecological devastation, militarism as a whole. Will your campaign push for that? Because we need a full televised debate. If you talk right and do your policies right and speak to us right and come visit us right, we'll know who to vote for.
All right.
How many of you know that song? Give it to me. What is it? Got to give the people what they want. Come on now, y'all got to know your music. And that video is from the historic Congress that was done, the first ever moral justice, poor people's Congress. The two chairs of that Congress are here tonight. Reverend. Rosalind Pellet, stand up, Rosalind. And we're thankful over 1,000 people came from more than 45 states. And you saw who was there. They would not have been there if they did not respect the power of this movement and what it is doing to bring poor people together of every race, creed, color, sexuality, and religion. The second co-chair, and before I do that, Fernando, where's Fernando? Fernando Garcia with Border Network is helping to tri-chair this first tour. You'll hear from him in a moment. But I want you to hear tonight all over the nation. They just said Iowa is on the line. California is on live stream. New York is on live stream. And Louisiana is on live stream. Give it up. But to set us right, to give us an understanding of why we're doing these 25 tour stops from here and then forward, and then on June 20th, 2020, next year, we're having a calling for a mass poor people's assembly and national moral march in Washington, D.C., June 20, 2020. And while we want everybody to be there, I want to give to you tonight none other than the co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign and the executive director of Kairos, the Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris. Would you all embrace her tonight?
Good evening. Good evening. Oh, you can do better than that. Good evening.
Good evening.
It is an honor and a blessing to be here in El Paso, a home of organizing, of resistance, of movements breaking through. And thanks to the Border Network and everybody at this church and all across the city that have welcomed us with open arms. As Dr. Barber was saying, yesterday was the 56th anniversary of the bombing of 16th Street Baptist Church, the murder of four young girls at the hands of white supremacists, and a society sick with racism. A newspaper report from the time indicated that all of the church's stained glass windows were destroyed. Except for one that depicted Christ leading a group of little children. But on that window, the face of Christ was blown out. And in addition to being the 56th anniversary of the church bombing in Birmingham, today is over a month and a week from the mass shooting here in Walmart. in El Paso, the Walmart where the most Latinos, the most Mexicans came. And a newspaper report from August 3rd showed a mom who laid over her 2-month-old baby, died saving that baby's life. 3 days after the Birmingham bombing, thousands of mourners spilled out of the sanctuary into the street for a mass funeral for 3 of those little girls. And less than 2 weeks after the shooting here in El Paso, 3,000 strangers paid their respects to Antonio Basco, who lost his wife, his only family member in the shooting. Days before the funeral in Birmingham, a white pastor suggested that the murder of those 4 girls, the murderer was a society sick with white supremacy and racism. He wrote, "It is all the Christians, all their ministers who spoke too late in anguished cries against violence." Indeed, as this community here at the border experienced in the shooting at Walmart, as this community has experienced in the detention and deportation of immigrants, at the high rates of poverty, the lack of affordable housing and living wage jobs, we know that our society, 56 years later, is all too sick.
That's right.
With racism. It is sick with poverty and ecological devastation, militarism, and a distorted moral narrative of Christian nationalism. And there are many who speak and act way too late against this violence. As we say in the Poor People's Campaign, there are 140 million people who are poor or low income, 43.5% of the U.S. population, 60% of African Americans, 65% of Latinos, 40% of Asians, 60% of Native Americans, and 67 million poor white Americans. But our society, our faith communities, our mainstream media are virtually silent.
That's right.
Silent on this matter. We have fewer voting rights today than we did 54 years ago. But politicians get away with suppressing our votes. Mitch McConnell has filibustered the Senate for thousands, more than 2,000 days, refusing to reinstate the Voting Rights Act. There are 15 million households who can't afford water, 4 million that have poison coming out of their pipes. But corporations and the U.S. military block communities from being able to get life-giving water. Even though Dr. King said, the world is made of 2/3 water, so why do we have to pay water bills?
That's right.
During the last 30 years, the U.S.-Mexico border has become one of the most militarized in the world. In 2018, Border Patrol had a budget of $14 billion. $14 billion. Think of the schools. Think of the hospitals. Think of the housing that could be built with that kind of resources. And federal spending on immigration, deportations, and border enforcement has increased 8 times in the past 40 years. And with this spending has become more deportations, 10 times the number of deportations. The cost of this border wall is to some to $22 billion. Some policy institutes think it's more like $60 billion. This could cover the costs of expanding Medicaid in 14 states. We could expand Medicaid. We could lift people into health care. But instead, we have an immoral, unjust wall. But we know that things don't have to be this way. Our poor people's moral budget tells us that if we cut our military and make our world more secure, if we tax those that can afford it the most, and if we invest in living wages, in health care, in education, in housing, if we decarcerate, the vast majority of people in this country could be better. The vast majority. We can raise the federal minimum wage to a living wage and experience a ripple effect where money is circulated back into our communities. We could gain $886 billion in estimated annual revenue from fair taxes on the wealthy and corporations. We could invest in public infrastructure and create more jobs outside of the military that could speed up a clean energy transition that would be good for this country and for this planet. We can end poverty. We can stop detention and deportation. We can provide a decent education for all our children. We can have it all. We can have it all. But to do this, we have to rise up. When we're thinking about rising up, there are a lot of stories from the Bible that come to mind. But being here in El Paso, the story of the Gerasene demoniac in particular, a person so sick with the militarization of their community, so sick with the racism and poverty in their community, that has to be sent away. And then after that demon is sent away, Jesus crosses the boat to the other side and raises a little girl, raises his Jairus' daughter. And then a woman who's gone to every doctor in the country touches his cloak and is healed. We have story after story of people rising up. It's a story of a sick society, sick with racism and violence and poverty, where Roman legions have taken over, where that violence has inhabited the bodies and minds of the people. But people can be healed when they rise up.
That's right.
We had a slogan organizing amongst the homeless about 20 years ago, which is that you only get what you're organized to take.
That's right, that's right.
You only get what you're organized to take. Well, there are people like the woman with the flow of blood in the Bible who take their freedom, who rise up and say, this doesn't have to be.
That's right, that's right.
We can do better. Well, people in these stories, people here in El Paso, people in Birmingham know that after there's a crucifixion, there comes a resurrection.
That's right. That's right.
After the bombing of the church, the movement rose powerfully, passed the Voting Rights Act, passed the Civil Rights Act. After violence and poverty and white supremacy break through, a movement breaks through. And so we in the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, are rising up for voting rights. We're rising up for immigrant rights. We're rising up for living wages. We're rising up for health care and housing rights and education and peace and justice. And this evening, as we launch the We Must Do More tour, more mobilizing, more organizing, more registering, more educating, we are rising up to demand a fair and just society. We demand a just immigration system that includes providing timely citizenship process that guarantees the right to vote. We demand the immediate full restoration and expansion of the Voting Rights Act. We demand an end to military aggression and warmongering. We demand a stop to the privatization of the military budget and any increase in military spending. We demand a ban on assault rifles, a ban on the easy access to firearms. We demand the demilitarization of our communities on the border and the interior.
That's right.
We demand an end to federal programs that send military equipment into local and state communities. We demand that the call to build a wall at the U.S.-Mexico border must be ceased.
Right.
We demand relief from crushing household, student, and consumer debt. We demand decent, safe, public housing. We demand the immediate implementation of federal and state living wage laws. We demand the right of all workers to form and join unions. We demand fully funded welfare programs for the poor, to end the attacks on SNAP and HEAP and other vital programs. We demand equity in education, an end to the resegregation of our schools. We demand 100% clean, renewable energy. We demand a fully funded public water and sanitation infrastructure.
That's right. That's right.
We demand a ban on all new pipelines, refineries, coal and oil and gas export terminals. We demand equality and safety of all persons, regardless of race, regardless of immigration status, religion, sexual orientation, or gender. We demand justice. We must do more. We believe that we can win.
Yes, yes.
We believe that we can win.
Yes. Say, we must do more. We must do more. How many of you are coming tonight, but you're going to organize among poor and impacted people and bring more people into this movement as we move from here to June 20th, 2020 with the Mass Poor People's Assembly Moral March on Washington. You think it's time for that?
Yeah.
Huh? All right. So we need you also. We have a text message. If you take out your phone online, we have text message, a text number. And I need the hashtag for tonight as well and for this week. Is it on the screen? So the hashtag is on the screen. We need you all to send that out. We need you to text M-O-R-A-L. If you believe what Liz just said, if you heard what she just said, if you heard how she framed it in everywhere faith and love was, people got up out of that situation. Text M-O-R-A-L to 90975. M-O-R-A-L to 90975. If you're online, do that and then send it out to 10 or 15 people. Now, those of you in here have to wait till afterwards. All right. But send it out to 10 or 15 people. Text M-O-R-A-L to 90975. When we talk about morals, now we're not just talking about people being nice to one another. We're talking about policy. We're talking about the way in which people understand whether policies line up with our deepest constitutional values and our deepest religious values. And if they don't, then they are morally inconsistent, constitutionally inconsistent, and they're economically insane if they don't line up. You got it? Moral, M-O-R-A-L. Text it to what? 909, what? 909. Let's welcome Colorado on the phone, on the line. Let's welcome North Carolina. And specifically Plymouth, my hometown. Let's rest. Little Rock, Arkansas. Come on, y'all. Cincinnati, Ohio. Boston, Massachusetts. And Claymont, Delaware. Now, I met this brother through Liz a long time ago, and he's been like a brother ever since, working with the Border Network. He has done so much work and led so many people, and he's always about the people and never about himself. And I Border Network, when we said we were doing this tour, they said, well, come here, start it here, particularly after the massive shooting started here. So I want you all to give a loving welcome. I know most of you know him, but give him some love tonight to Fernando Garcia as he comes to say why he is joining this movement to have a Mass Poor People's Assembly Moral March on Washington. See?
Okay. ¿Cómo están? How are you? Buenas noches and good night.
There. My name is Fernando Garcia. I'm the executive director and the border and the founder of the Border Network for Human Rights. Let me first say that I'm not representing here myself, but almost 1,000 families that are part of our network. And we're very proud to be part of the Poor People's Campaign. And when I say that is that for many, many years, almost a little bit more than 20 years, we had been looking for a place, for a framework, for an idea of where to connect our hopes and aspirations. And it has been a long journey. We've been organizing on the ground every day, every weekend, every night, for more than 20 years already. And what we had found in that process is that Border Network, it is not about immigrant rights, because I don't believe that that exists by itself. What we believe is what we're fighting for truly. It is about human rights for everybody in America. Whether there, it is about housing, healthcare, education, political participation, public services, all of that is embedded in the fight of our immigrant border communities. But let me now say something about what happened on August the 3rd. It was not easy for many of us in our community. But what we know is it was not a random circumstantial shooting. It was not just another shooting. That's right. What happened there and then is that three evils came together. Three evils came together. The first one, weapons of war in our streets, in our society. The second one, racism and white supremacy that is has this country. That's right. And the third one, it is the rhetoric, the narrative that is coming from the highest office of this nation. So we need to say it what it is. This was not about video games. It was not only about mental health. That's right. And since then, and even before that day, and I think because of what we are in El Paso, what was really attacked is the symbol of what we represent here in El Paso. We had fought every anti-immigrant, racist, a strategy of this administration and other administrations. Children in cages, border walls, rejection of refugees, children dying in our detention centers. And we resisted them all. We were in the streets protesting outside of detention centers, in vigils every night. That was attacked on August the 3rd. That's right. The other thing that was attacked was the fact that El Paso is a welcoming city. It's a welcoming community. El Paso has opened its homes, churches, community centers for immigrants and refugees. And on August the 3rd, they want to silence that. They wanted us to stop doing that. They wanted us to stop resisting, and they wanted us to stop welcoming immigrants and refugees. But that will not happen. Actually, the answer is that we must do more. So let me say a few things before I pass it on to our testimonials about how this came to be, why El Paso has become the symbol of resistance. It was mentioned already that we are, right now, you are in one of the most militarized borders in the world. We have 900 miles of fencing and walls in this community, 23,000 Border Patrol agents, 12,000 underground sensors, 170 aircrafts, 8 drone systems in our sky, 84 water vessels, 500 surveillance systems, 9,000 night vision goggles, 6,000 thermal technology, dozens of immigration checkpoints, and dozens of detention centers. Welcome to the most militarized region in the nation, and probably one of the most in the top of the world. This is the border. And this has an impact, and let me say that. This has an impact in our border communities. Our communities live in an entrapped zone. People cannot move out of the border. We have the example of one of our leaders in the community. She has degenerative liver disease that can only be treated in San Antonio and Houston. And she cannot travel there because of the checkpoints. This region seems to be the only place in America where constitutional rights do not exist, where immigration agencies feel that they can do anything to our community with complete disregard of our rights. We have seen excessive use of force, sometimes lethal, against our communities. Every year, we had 500 migrants that die while trying to cross the border. More than 10,000 of them had died since 1993. Agents use racism and racial profiling to stop, question, and detain our people. Violations of the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendment rights had become the norm in our community. So let me start wrapping up with this idea. This is not, and we're not posing a question if we need enforcement at the border. It is a question of what type of enforcement do we want. Making agencies being accountable, respect our rights, know the Constitution, start separating families, all of that is the right thing to do. And that is in line with our American values. But this is the dilemma. It is here at the border where the future of America it is being shaped. In our history, borders have defined the character of our nation. For many, the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island represented the best ideals of America. Our communities know that today, at the border, this border will become the new Ellis Island. The new Ellis Island of our time. The families that are in Juarez, the ones that are in detention centers, they have the same hopes and aspirations of those families coming through Ellis Island 100 years ago. Today, we must decide what kind of America we want. Decide what our future will be. Will America incarcerate children and put families in jail? Build walls? Let immigration agents act with impunity? Or America will accept its destiny that is a nation of immigrants, and because of that, we're exceptional. Let's do more. Let's do more. And let me tell you, we are preparing to have buses coming from El Paso, from the border, to Washington on June of 2020. The border will come to Washington. So I'm going to pass it on for some testimonials about the realities of our border communities, and we'll go with Lourdes Limon that will talk about Border Patrol abuses.
Buenas noches, gracias por venir, bienvenidos a todos.
Good night, thanks for coming.
Mi nombre es Lourdes Limón y soy miembro de la Red Fronteriza por los Derechos Humanos y yo soy vengo de la región de San Lampar, Nuevo México.
I'm Lourdes Limón, I'm a member of the Border Network for Human Rights and I come from the San Lampar community in New Mexico, close to the border.
Y la razón por la cual yo pertenezco a esta organización es por la, lamentablemente, es por los abusos que, que se cometen en nuestra comunidad.
And the reason that I became part of Border Network is because of the abuses that are committed against our community members.
Pues es muy frecuente que ande la patrulla fronteriza dentro de nuestras propiedades, arriba de nuestros techos, con helicópteros, a caballo.
It's very frequent to have in our communities Border Patrol agents within our homes, in our on top of our houses, and with helicopters and vehicles.
Y esto es a cualquier hora del día, en la noche, en la mañana, mediodía.
And this happened at any time of, throughout the day, in the morning, in the afternoon, and in the evening.
No nomás ya es patrulla fronteriza, sino también están ya los militares dentro de nuestra comunidad.
It's not only Border Patrol, but also we have now the military within our community.
Nosotros pensamos que cuando se construyó el muro iba a parar este acoso por patrulla fronteriza, pero desgraciadamente ha aumentado el abuso.
We thought when they built this wall close to my community, as they sold it as a solution, that we wouldn't have any more problems with Border Patrol.
Pues es muy triste, ¿verdad?, que la gente no se sienta segura en nuestra comunidad, que si sale a caminar los padres y a los niños andan afuera, sean víctimas de ser interrogados por los agentes de patrulla fronteriza.
But that's not true because our people, our community members, they feel unsafe within our communities. Our children are being questioned by Border Patrol and by other agencies.
Pero gracias a la Red Fronteriza yo he estado educándome, aprendiendo mis derechos y lo estoy compartiendo en mi comunidad y ahora nos estamos educando para defendernos de acerca de nuestros derechos para no permitirnos abusos por parte de Border Patrol.
But thanks to the organizing with Border Network, now we're organizing, we're learning our rights, we are defending our rights and we're pushing back on the abuses of Border Patrol.
Y por esa razón, pues vamos a ir a junio 2020 a Washington a marchar con la caravana de la gente pobre.
And for that reason, we are going to Washington on June 2020 to join the Poor People's Campaign March in Washington.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Bueno, buenas noches. Mi nombre es Margarita Arvizu.
Hi, good evening. My name is Margarita Arvizu.
Mi historia es acerca de del ataque del 3 de agosto en Walmart.
My testimony is about the attack, the racist attack that happened on August the 3rd in Walmart.
Les voy a platicar un poquito de lo que pasó ese día.
I will tell you a little bit of what happened that day.
Yo estaba en el hospital porque un pariente había fallecido.
I was in a hospital because one relative died.
Mi hija en ese momento eran como las 10:22 que me habla.
My daughter called me around 10:22 that day.
Y me dice, "Mamá, estoy trabajando en Walmart de Cielo Vista."
Mom, I'm working at the Walmart in Cielo Vista.
Dice, "Ven para que me visiten."
Come to visit me.
Entonces en ese momento pues yo apagué mi teléfono porque estaba en el hospital.
At that moment I turned off my phone because I was at the hospital with my relative.
Entonces mi hijo que estaba conmigo recibe la llamada de mi hija al instante.
Then minutes away, my son received a call from my daughter.
Me había hablado a mí, pero mi teléfono estaba apagado.
She called me, but my phone was off.
Y le dice a mi hijo que estaban balaceando en Walmart.
And she told my son that something was happening in Walmart. There was a shooting inside.
Entonces, en ese momento, mi hijo quiere salir corriendo a Walmart y le dije, espérate.
My son wanted to just run and start heading towards Walmart, but I stopped him.
Le dije, a lo mejor fue alguien que se peleó entre sí y no pasa nada, le
probably
dije.
Probably that was just like somebody, a fight between two people, probably that was nothing, just nothing.
En ese momento empezamos a ver que en las redes sociales empiezan a salir fotografías de gente que estaba tirada.
But we start seeing in the online and through the internet pictures of people that was injured and shot at and killed.
Nos quisimos comunicar con mi hija y ya no nos contestaba.
We tried to communicate now with my daughter and we couldn't.
Salimos lo más pronto posible del hospital.
We left the hospital as soon as possible.
Inclusive íbamos a chocar porque iba mi hijo a exceso de velocidad.
We almost crashed because we were at high speed towards Walmart.
El camino del hospital a Walmart era eterno para nosotros.
That distance between where we were at Walmart, it seems an eternity for us.
En ese momento nos vuelve a marcar mi hija y dice que está en cielo vista.
And then my daughter called us and told us that she was out of the Walmart and now she was on the mall. Cielo Vista Mall.
Y nos dice, llevamos el altavoz y nos dice, tengo miedo de morir.
And she told me, because she was a speaker, she told us that she was afraid of dying.
Dice que en ese momento que estaba en Cielo Vista, dice que ella escuchó una detonación y cayó enfrente de ella un maniquí.
She said that at that time that inside the mall there was another shooter because she heard some shots inside that mall.
Dice que ya los estaban metiendo en las tiendas y en una de esas tiendas pues es de puro vidrio las puertas y ella decidió salirse.
So she was trying to get into the stores at that mall, but they couldn't, so she decided just to get out of the mall.
Dice que ya no supo cómo salió de Cielo Vista y vio a uno de sus compañeros dentro arriba de una troca y la persona los alejó de Cielo Vista.
She doesn't know how that happened exactly, but she jumped into this truck, and that was the way that she got out of that area of the mall.
Fue algo impresionante porque durante el camino que llegábamos a Walmart había muchísima policía, el Border Patrol, estábamos asustados.
It was something extraordinary because there were a lot of law enforcement, a lot of police, a lot of Border Patrol also, and we were extremely afraid.
Pudimos encontrar a mi hija y llevarla a la casa.
We found our daughter and we took her home.
Todas sus pertenencias se quedaron ahí, su carro,
all,
todo.
All her belongings, her cars, her keys, her wallets, they're staying at Walmart.
Ya después, cuando fuimos a la casa y vimos lo que este muchacho había escrito,
then when we went back to our home and then we saw what the shooter wrote.
Fue mucho coraje, pero a la misma vez
there was a lot of anger and we were very upset, but at the same time,
pero a la misma vez mucha tristeza por las personas que habían muerto.
Very sad, I mean a lot of sadness because of the people that had died.
Porque era un ataque directo a mi familia por ser mexicana.
Because it was an attack against my family, a direct attack against Mexicans.
En ese momento,
at that moment,
me di cuenta que las palabras que uno dice,
I realized that the words that we say,
pueden mucho.
They can do a lot. They can do too much.
No le estoy echando la culpa a ningún político de que le puso el arma a este muchacho.
I'm not blaming any politicians, but
pero es el odio, el racismo y la xenofobia que se ha seguido hablando durante estos dos últimos años.
That is the hate, the xenophobia and racism, that the climate that is being surrounding us all of these years.
Pues nos vino a alcanzar aquí al Paso, que es una de las ciudades más seguras del país.
He came to El Paso, to one of the safest cities in the country.
Y más triste, ¿verdad?, que alguien de fuera vino a precisamente a ese Walmart donde mucha gente hispana viene de compras.
And it was very upsetting that somebody came from outside of El Paso and went directly to that Walmart, the most Mexican Walmart.
Entonces yo, como miembro de la Red Fronteriza por los Derechos Humanos,
then I, as a member of the Border Network for Human Rights,
no me puedo quedar callada con lo que ha pasado.
I would not remain silent of what happened. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Creo que todos necesitamos luchar por nuestros derechos.
We need to fight, all of us, for our rights.
Porque a todos se nos vea iguales.
That someday all of us would be look at with the same rights and dignity.
Que se nos vea como seres humanos, como lo que somos.
That we can be seen as human beings, as we are.
Que no importe tu color.
That doesn't matter the color.
Ni cómo hablas, ni cómo te ves.
Or how you look like, how do you speak.
Entonces por eso nosotros, ¿verdad?
That's
como
why
organización,
we, the Border Network,
nos unimos a esta campaña.
We joined the Poor People's Campaign.
Y tenemos que estar en Washington el próximo año.
And we will be in Washington in June 2020.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Buenas tardes, mi nombre es Manuela Costa.
My name is Manuela Costa.
Aquí para compartir un poquito de mi testimonio de separación de familias.
I want to share a little bit my testimony about family separation.
Hace un año, un domingo 25 de febrero del 2018 fue.
Almost a year ago, on February 28, 2018.
Eran como las 5 de la mañana cuando llegó ICE a mi casa.
Like around 5 a.m., ICE agents knock at the door in my house.
Y eran como unos 8 agentes.
There were 8 agents.
Que iban a mi casa como si fueran a buscar a una persona criminal.
If they showed up at my house like if they were looking for like a criminal.
Pero al llegar ellos tocaron mi puerta.
They knock at my door.
Y yo me vuelvo poquito atrás, tengo como 18 años que pertenezco a esta organización.
But since I've been in Border Network for more than 18 years already,
donde he aprendido cuáles son mis derechos,
where I learn about my rights.
So cuando yo veo a la puerta que es ICE, yo no abro mi puerta.
When I saw that there were ICE agents out of my home, I did not open the door.
Ellos en repetidas ocasiones preguntaron cuál era mi nombre, el cual yo nunca se los dije,
they
porque yo tenía mis
in,
derechos.
In several occasions about my name, and I didn't say my name because I knew my rights.
So les dije que a quien buscaban, ellos no me supieron dar el nombre.
I asked them what they were looking for, they couldn't say anything.
Les dije que me pasaran la orden que traían por abajo de la puerta.
To actually give me the if they had any warrants, arrest warrants or search warrants, to actually pass it under the door.
So ellos me, cuando me pasaron la hoja, pues toda estaba en inglés, que yo no sé inglés, pero mi hija sí lo sabe.
But they passed one of these documents, and I saw it. It was all in English, so my daughter had to look at it.
So cuando yo le di la hoja a mi hija, le dije, esta hoja que dice está firmada por un juez. Ella me dijo, no está firmada por ningún juez.
So my daughter reviewed the document. It was not a warrant, it was not signed by a judge.
So entonces yo le digo al oficial, esta hoja no es una hoja válida, no está firmada por un juez. So para que ustedes puedan entrar a mi casa, necesitan una hoja firmada por un juez.
So I told the officers, the agents, that was not a warrant, and I wouldn't let them inside my home if it was not signed by a judge.
So ellos trataron de intimidarme diciéndome que me iban a poner cargos.
They harassed me and they threatened me with that they want to prosecute me.
Pero yo no tuve ningún miedo, no tenía temor, no tenía nada porque yo conozco mis derechos.
I was not afraid because I know my rights.
Entonces, pues ellos se retiraron, me dejaron una tarjeta.
They left, they just left a business card.
Ese mismo día nos pusimos en contacto con un abogado.
And then we talked to a lawyer, an attorney that day, somebody
Y pues fuimos a hablar con él, ya que mi esposo no tenía ningún récord criminal, ningún. Pues solamente estaba trabajando, es lo que vinimos aquí.
So my husband didn't have any criminal records, he was just working, and we went with the attorney and trying to figure out what would happen.
Y ya que habló con el abogado, pues decidió entregarse.
So when he talked to the attorney, he decided to turn himself in because he was the target of this ICE action.
Ya de que tenemos dos hijas ciudadanas y pensamos que como no había ningún récord, él podía quedarse aquí.
And since we had two U.S. children and since he didn't have any criminal record, we thought that he would be able to stay in the United States.
Pero desafortunadamente no fue así. Decidieron que lo deportaran.
But it wasn't like that. And there was a decision made and he was deported.
So, nos quedamos solas aquí y pues ahora pues estamos sola. Estoy sola con mis hijas en
I'm myself
lugar.
Along with my daughters.
Y creo que desde que este presidente empezó a empezar con sus retóricas, con sus políticas, con todo lo que está diciendo en contra de los latinos.
And since this president started with this rhetoric against Latinos,
ha sido mucho temor a toda la gente latina.
There's been a lot of fear within Latino communities.
Porque ha habido mucha separación de familias. Él no le importa las familias cómo estén. Si no hay personas que sean criminales, no venimos a robar, no venimos a hacer nada, solamente a salir adelante con nuestros hijos.
It seems that this president and other people in the administration, they don't care about Latinos, they don't care about our families, they don't care about immigrants, because we just come to work.
So, un poquitito hoy me decía una muchacha, se fue a vivir a Houston, es ciudadana, y me dice que se regresó porque a ella le decían, tú eres mexicana, dice, soy ciudadana, pero veo el racismo, yo me regresé otra vez al paso.
So I went to Houston to work and I saw racism there also. I was being told that I was a Mexican every day. That's what I came back to El Paso.
So este es parte de mi testimonio. That's muy largo, pero
that's my testimony. It's long. I apologize about it.
Pero estoy agradecida y muy contenta de estar en pertenecer a esta organización donde conozco mis derechos. Y mi familia los conoce y estamos organizando la comunidad para que sigan aprendiendo.
And we are very proud of being part of Border Network because I and my family, we know our rights and we're organizing our community so we can keep fighting. Yeah. Thank you. And Ed, I'm going to pass the microphone to Justin that comes from San Antonio from the top Texas Organizing Project.
Don't turn it. Yeah. There we go. Good evening. My name is Justin Lasea. Growing up in Flint, Michigan exposed me at a young age to the suffering and blight caused by deindustrialization. Spending my youth watching my hometown decay as General Motors left the people of Flint to poverty and homelessness just to increase their profit motive. In the late 90s, my family was forced to move to El Paso so my father could continue to work as jobs were transferred to the maquiladoras in Ciudad Juarez. Before the militarization of the border and before passports were necessary to return home,
from a visit to the Mercado across the border. After a few years, we were relocated back to Flint, where I interned with the city government in my last year of college, the same year as the housing crisis, when jobs were scarce and the city laid off half of its emergency service personnel. And I was forced to relocate to San Antonio to find work. Even though it's one of the fastest growing cities in America, San Antonio is suffering from rising inequality and is currently one of the most segregated cities in the United States. Recently, the Nix Hospital in downtown San Antonio announced that it will be closing because it is no longer profitable to treat the low-income citizens of the area that are being pushed out by gentrification. The first round of mass layoffs will be this Friday, affecting the financial stability of thousands of healthcare workers and their families, and closing access to working class families that are already being forced out of their homes. All of these things illustrate the necessity of building an ethical society that serves the needs of all people and not just a privileged few. And because of this, I will be in DC on June 20th, 2020 to stand with the Poor People's Campaign. And solidarity with the UAW and all workers. Yeah.
Are there any union folk in here? Say solidarity. Solidarity. We make it happen. We make it happen. So turn that just like that. Now, what you're understanding, and from people who are listening from all over the country, in fact, Birmingham, Alabama is on the line, and Jackson, Mississippi, and they're sending some more that are coming up. Detroit, Michigan is on. Come on, Louisville, Kentucky, Dayton, Ohio, New Jersey, Charlotte, North Carolina. And what's happening is we're building around the country because people are understanding how connected we are. This movement is not just about facts and figures. It's about people, names and people and places and life and death. That's what makes it different. That's why every rally we have people to testify, to make this real when we hear the numbers, right? We have promised that when we get to June 20, 2020, and that massive stage and thousands and thousands of people, that stage will be reserved for impacted people to speak. Not for people to speak on their behalf, but for impacted leaders and moral leaders to introduce impacted leaders. It is time that America hears from the people who are hurting, not just their stories, but the solutions. The solutions. And we need, you just saw something that we need more of to happen. Did you see that brother happens to be white, but he was up here talking about racism. But he wasn't just talking about words. He wasn't just talking about it when it happens violent. He was talking about policy racism. That's the real racism. The words cover for the policies. The words and the policies and the violence cover for the policy. We're here in El Paso. I want everybody who happens to be white and named as black to stand up for a second. I want any of our Mexican, Latino brothers and sisters, I want everybody who's white, who's black, or who's native, or who's Asian to stand up. We must start saying to America, stop lying on our Mexican brothers and sisters. See, they've said we have to do more. We who are white, we who are black, we can't separate ourselves. This stuff is all connected. And we must say, listen, the first thing is we're going to stop you from telling the lie anyway that folk are illegal. First of all, human beings are not illegal. Second of all, if you want to have that discussion, let's have the real discussion that America stole Mexico stole Texas, stole New Mexico, stole California from the Mexican people in the first place. Abraham Lincoln stood against it. Henry Thoreau stood against it. Until we tell that truth, that all of this that we see is built on a lie. And ever since that, what has happened to our Mexican brothers and sisters is they have been used as pawns of division. They've been used to uphold the American economy, and when we get through with them, we throw them away. In World War II, when we were in war, they had an Operation Basario that went over and grabbed all the Mexican people they could to fill the jobs of the white men that were in the war. After that, they had Operation Wetback, led from Eisenhower. Trump ain't the first one. What Trump is doing is nothing but Operation Wetback without the name. That's all it is. And 1 million of our brothers and sisters were deported. Never should have happened to them, violently. Many of them were put in ships that floated down the Mississippi River like slave ships that came across the Atlantic Ocean. And we who are black and we who are white have to say, you're not going to isolate this community anymore. And that's why we must do more. Thank you. And we must rise together. Now, for those who are hearing online, we want you to know there are many, many other stories and reasons why people are organizing to build power, and we're registering people for the movement who will vote, building power and change the narrative. Take a look at some other stories, those in here and around the nation. These are people that are mobilizing in that 140 million.
Our backs are against the wall, and we got no choice but to push.
You know, before you come down here and cast stones in a glass home, walk a mile in the shoes for a minute.
One out of 16 people in Aberdeen are homeless. A lot of people are young. That's something that's...
In this encampment?
Yeah.
So they're millennial?
Yeah, between 18 and 35.
Between 18 and 35.
Is probably the largest demographic here.
No health care.
Over there, there's a memorial cross where my younger brother died.
Here.
He had a heart attack or a stroke due to freaking pneumonia that he couldn't get to the doctor in time. But we kept trying to get him up there, and every time we sent him up there, they sent him back with no antibiotics, gave him a couple of ibuprofen, and said, oh, you'll get better. That's how they treat people down here. And he ended up having pneumonia so bad that he coughed so hard it caused a stroke in his head. Another thing to open your eyes to this area down here, when men get out of the service, we're overqualified for jobs. What is overqualified?
What is it? That's right.
It's their polite way of saying they don't want to take the risk to employing you. We were in charge of $1 million machinery, guns, everything, but we can't flip a burger, wash a car, or...
And you want to.
You know, just to work.
Just to work.
Get back into society, man.
I worked 41 years in the coal mines. I have black lung, and it's just unfathomable what these poor coal miners have to go through in order to get what they have worked for and deserve.
My name is Pamela Rush. I'm from Lowndes County, Alabama. And I live in a mobile home with my two kids.
Sorry.
And I got raw sewage. I don't have no money. I'm poor. And I have to travel back and forth to Birmingham to take my daughter with the CPAP machine. Don't have a car and don't have nobody to take her.
There's a new chemical company that's producing another carcinogen. And when you think of that, what effect does that have on us as people, especially our children? But in our community, it's amazing the people who just started dying of cancer. That became the big fear. And when my wife was diagnosed with cancer, I was amazed at the black women that would ring our doorbell and walk in the door and pull a wig off to show my wife that I have it too. That red stuff you see there? Yeah, that's the chemical, which is primarily mercury. And they dump tons of it in the river. The school over there directly across the school ground. And we tried to get the government to test that, the earth, the soil in a playground, and they refused to do it.
Now, I'm also a Kansas farmer's wife. Kansas farmers are committing suicide at a far greater rate than the national average. Why? Because they're stressed out. They're stressed out. They're usually in debt up to their eyeballs because they can't pay for all the equipment that it takes to run a farm. And they're in the most dangerous line of work there is, yet many can't afford to buy health insurance. We have no hospital. We are in a food desert. We have one grocery store for the whole county. Our neighbor, my husband's uncle, still drinks pond water self-treated with chlorine. He had to have a kidney removed at age 64. And the year before that, his wife died of some unknown cancer.
We started in a Lem Pomo Indian colony, which when you enter the reservation, before you enter the reservation, it says hazardous area. Enter at your own risk by the county lake of Clear Lake, California. They've been mining mercury since 1957 and have left it open with heavy metal leaking into the water and the land. They stopped fishing in the 1970s and have a high rate of cancer in the community. I worry because I have family, not only just my family there, but the indigenous people in the surrounding communities that are being affected. We talk about health care. We talk about worrying about the environment, but yet when they're allowing open pit mines and letting it leak into the land, into the water, the high rate of cancer and the high bills of health is going to continue to raise because of corporations and greeds and politicians that don't want to listen.
I'm 46 years old. I've lived in poverty here in West Virginia every day of my life. And I'm working. I am working poor with a bachelor's degree. I'm doing the best I can with what I have.
I'm here today to share my daughter Venus's story. Venus discovered a small lump in her breast, and she wasn't insured. Venus had to be approved for every prescription and every piece of medical equipment that she needed. I'm standing here today in solidarity with the Poor People's Campaign because no one should have to bury their child in America because they don't have health care insurance.
This is not right.
To follow that breaking news in Albany, where a large group of protesters have moved into the street.
Washington Avenue between City Hall and Lark Street closed down.
Protesters with the Poor People's Campaign of Indiana.
2 o'clock on the east coast, 2 o'clock in the middle, 2 o'clock on the west coast. A wave, and the historians tell us it's never happened before.
All over the country, you see them? All over the country, people of every different race, creed, and color. And we're taking that video and showing it to every major media outlet in this country. We're going to the editorial boards. We're saying these are the stories. You all have got to get off of. We're saying that you have got to stop showing the tweeter in chief every night and not showing the people who are being hurt by the policies before him and the policies that he's enacting and those in the Senate and other places that are continuing that we're challenging both political parties. Did you see the first person was from Appalachia? Did you see that? Appalachia's coming together. Did you see Louisiana down in a place called Cancer Alley where right now they got 1 billion gallons of acid water that they're talking about spraying up in the atmosphere to get rid of it and letting it fall back down on the people? Did you see? Did you see Kansas? A white farmer. This is what is about this movement. People are coming together that folk don't expect. A white Kansas farmer saying farmers are committing suicide. And we're showing them that the people that have been playing the race card and doing voter suppression and attacking immigrants, those same people, when they use that stuff to get elected, once they get elected, they turn around and hurt white farmers. They hurt white people, they hurt everybody in policy. Did you see the mother who lost her child in Alabama? But what you don't know is her child died for the lack of Medicaid expansion. But the majority of the people in Alabama that don't have health care are white poor folk. And they're coming together now, black and white. Did you see that? Did you see
The last one, what was that at the end? Did you see the native, 400 tribes? That was the Apache Nation from Arizona, my friend. They are coming together. They're organizing. And we got to understand our connection to them. We can't fight any longer in these silos. Race, people fighting racism over here, people fighting against poverty over here, people fighting against ecological devastation over here, war economy over here, and immorality in our religious values over here, and everybody being separated. That is how they win, those who continue to play us against each other. And this campaign, as Liz often says, is bringing folk together, and people are ready. They're not even ready. They don't want another organization. They want an organism. They want a movement that where folk can come together. And it's happening all over the country. Did I miss any city that was up there? Did I miss anybody that was on that film? And there's so many more unlikely allies. People who've been pitted against one another are finding their way to one another. And they are rising up. And that's why we're here. Most of what I had to say, I'm going to say it on Wednesday at the rally. And we want everybody online to get hundreds of people to join us on Wednesday on the 18th. And you go out here and bring people. We want that line of that march on Monday to be symbolic of us marching through the streets of Washington, D.C., June 2020. We want it to be symbolic of it starting here. And why? And why do we want to do it in D.C.? Why June? Because it's after the primaries, but it's before all the conventions. Ain't no need to wait till August or September. We want to challenge both political parties. If you're serious about healing America, you got to be serious about answering the solutions to deal with systemic racism, poverty, ecological devastation, and this war economy. You can't have it both ways. You can't have it both ways. And we intend to challenge everybody on this. Everybody. Everybody. Why June? Why June? So that we can ramp up and increase the number of people who register for the movement and who vote. Why June? You remember Freedom Summer? We want a moral summer. We want a justice summer. Why June? Why June the 20th? It's the day before the summer solstice when the light is on the earth the most, and it's time to put light on what's going on in this country. Why June? Because we've spent 2 years waking folk up. Now it's time for people to rise. We've talked enough about the problems. Now it's time for us to connect the solutions to the problem. June. So text MORAL, M-O-R-A-L, to 90975. And then I want you to say three things and I'm through. Because tonight was a pre-rally, the pep rally. Liz and IPS and our economists have said to us, you got some work to do, even in this movement. And the first thing is you've got to stop, you've got to challenge the lies that have been told so long that even poor folks start believing. And one of those lies is there ain't enough. I know that's not good English, but it's there ain't enough resources. So we've done an audit and a budget. We'll talk some about it Wednesday. That there is more than enough. And every question doesn't have to end with this. Well, how much is it going to raise taxes? The reality is it's our priorities. If you took one contract of one military contractor, you could fund Medicaid expansion in every state. We're going to talk about Wednesday, the amount of money, if you put it into living wages, it would come back and vastly increase the gross domestic product. We're going to talk about if you tax fairly, you don't even have to tax unfairly, the wealthiest among us, it could change how we could invest. We have read the book that Nobel Peace Prize economist Joseph Stiglitz said. He said that one day America is going to have to answer this question: what is the cost of poverty? Not how much does it cost to fix it. What is it costing us not to fix it? What is it costing us not to deal with it?
We will never stop having these ebbs and flows and 1 year some and then recession and going on until we fix the fundamentals of this society. You cannot have a nation where 43.5% of your people are living in poverty and think that that nation is on solid ground. I said a few weeks ago, you know, because every time we start talking about voting rights and health care and dealing with climate, Rob, and somebody will ultimately say, you know, that poor people's campaign is promoting socialism. And I said a few weeks ago, if that's what you want to call it, hey, but I know the trick in that, because half the folk that call it that don't even know what the definition is to start with. I won't even go there. But even beyond that, we're not going to get tied up in labels. What we're going to do is throw it back and say, okay, if that's where you want to go. Now, we call it, in my tradition, we call caring for the poor and lifting up people and treating the folk right salvation. That's what we call it. We call it salvation. Huh? Yeah. We and the Constitution is called promoting the general welfare and providing for the common good. So we got a lot of words. We got a lot of titles. We need to get beyond titles and get it done. But if you want to call it socialism, then you have to turn around and call Jesus a socialist. And you got to call the Constitution socialism. And you got to call the Bill of Rights socialism. See, we're not going to play that game anymore. We're not going to play a words game. We're going to look our faith is known by our works. A tree is known by the fruit it bears. And America is known, either America, you're going to decide to be an unequal empire or an equal justice society. But you can't have it both ways. And so let me deal with that first lie. Somebody say scarcity. No, say it like you mean. Say scarcity. Telling the lie that there's not enough is a great big old lie. Great, say great big old lie. And we got to take thousands and thousands and thousands of people to D.C. and across this country to challenge that lie. Here's the other lie. We must do more. See, sometimes you can listen to Goliath too long. You can listen to your adversary so long, you make your adversary bigger than life. Now, I don't go by this theory that Trump is the beginning of the problems in America, nor that his not having him in office would end the problems, because I understand the complexity of it. But he is a symptom. Of a problem. And part of that is, for the last 40 years, we've really pretty much eradicated the issue of poverty being dealt with in the public square. And the same is true with racism. We only want to talk about racism when it's some group like the Klan or some mass killing or somebody calls by the N-word, and we don't want to deal with racism. I think right now the most racist person that engages in systematic racism in the government right now is not Trump. It's McConnell. Because if you look at the policies that he's pushing and the things he's blocking, that's what racism ultimately is. But sometimes people talk so much. There's a lady that wrote a book, her name is Nancy McLean. She says, take 2 weeks off for Trump. Take 2 weeks off focusing on Trump. You kind of know what he's gonna do. So by now you ought to understand. And you don't need to act like surprised every week. Oh my God, what did he do now? And do some real examination of our own power, if it is mobilized, organized, registered, and educated. Let me say this and I'm through. You know how many people voted in 2016? No, but do you know how, I know not enough, but do you know how many voted? 138 million. That's 2 million less than all the poor and low wealth people in this country. Or actually 5 million. If there are 143 million poor and low-wealth people in the country, there are 5 million more poor and low-wealth people in this country. That's power. If it's mobilized, organized, registered, and educated, not just to vote, but for the movement, for a long-term movement, who vote? See, that's a different phrase. Registering people for the movement who vote is different than just registering people for the movement, registering people to vote, and then after they vote, you don't talk about them anymore. You leave them alone. That's not what we're talking about. How many people didn't vote? Could 100 million. 100 million. I'm going to talk a little bit about in Texas, about how the margins of poor people and impacted people far outweigh any of the margins by which some of the extremists in this state have won elections. Year after year after year after year. Huh? Think about that. 143 million poor and low-wealth people and only 138 million voted. We have to stop even saying that folk won in 2016. They did not win. They cheated. They lied. They scammed. And then we have to say some of it belongs on us not doing enough. You can't run from that. 78,000 votes in three states is the difference. In my own state, 500,000 eligible, already registered African Americans stayed home, and another million white people. Another million white people, and Trump won by less than 150,000 votes. We must do more. We must do more. And not just for the ballot box, but we got to do there to show our power there and then show our power in the suites and in the streets. We must do more. Now, Mavis Staples did a little song. And Mavis Staples said, look, she was reflecting on Nina Simone. Musicians, y'all can come on up a little bit. I'm not going to sing, but come on up. And she said, it's not the rising, it's the waking. Now, I love the phrase, get woke. But every now and then, I want to say, get up. Not just get woke. Get woke and get up. Rise. It's not the waking, it's the rising. And she declared that what has to happen is a rising. And this tour begins towards Washington, D.C., on June 20th, 2020, right here in El Paso, the rising begins. The resurrection from the policy death and the physical death begins. All over the nation, people are rising to build power, rising to change the narrative. They're standing up all over this country to say, look, we got enough resources. But we got to rise. The only way it's going to happen, we got to change the moral conversation and the moral integrity of this nation. All the things we want will not happen without a movement. They never have, and they never will. And so black folk and white people and brown people and native people and Asian people, it's rising time. Huh? Christians and Jews and Muslims and Hindus and Unitarians and people of faith and not of faith, is rising time. Young and old, gay and straight, it's time to mobilize, to organize, to register, to educate people for the movement who vote. And we began in Texas and end in Tennessee. Think about that. We began in Texas, El Paso. We end in Tennessee with Memphis and Mississippi coming together. And then a few weeks later, we're in Washington, D.C. 278 days. Start a ticker, y'all. Put it on the line. 270 days from tonight. Will you help make sure that thousands rise? Huh? 278 days. We got to organize. To say to the political establishment, with this moral poor people's assembly. Notice, it's not a march. It's a moral poor people's assembly and a mass poor people's assembly and a moral march on Washington. We got 268 days to say, we will not be satisfied until the poor of this nation are loved, lifted, and liberated. And we know that that cannot happen until we address systemic racism, systemic poverty, ecological devastation, and the war economy all together. If I was in my home church, I'd say, do I have a witness? Is there a witness in the house tonight at this prep rally? If you're a witness, stand on your feet. If you believe that there needs to be a rising, Now, I come from a strange, crazy tradition of prophetic Christianity. I'm a prophetic Christian. I honor all the traditions. But let me tell you something I learned. Come on, y'all. You say, yeah, Reverend Barber, you know, we're here tonight. You know, people are going to say it's impossible. Nelson Mandela said, everybody says things are impossible till it happens. Huh? You know, when those four girls were killed in that church in Birmingham, they were killed after Birmingham was desegregated. That's why they were blown up. And the Birmingham March didn't begin but with 56 people, the first one. 56. 56. We've got to remember that history has never started with masses. It's always started with a remnant that stays at it long enough to draw the masses. You know why that March on Washington happened? Because they were organizing in 600 cities. It wasn't because Dr. King said, y'all come to D.C. There were small groups of folk organizing in 600 cities around this country. We need everybody, every city to fill a bus. One, just one, but every city, every county, every church, just a bus. Or a bus load on a train. I come from a strange tradition where one day there was this great big 9-foot tall giant and a guy just organized 5 rocks. He didn't even have to use all of them. He didn't organize 5,000 rocks. He organized 5 rocks. He said, I got one for you and your 4 cousins. I come from a strange tradition where it says the mustard seed is small, but when it grows up, nobody thought we'd have 43 states organized in less than 2 years and 38 million people redoing our tweets and thousands of people. I come from this strange tradition that says, look, you can take 12 folk and one of them be a backstabber. Just 12. And if you move right and love right and talk right and help people right, sometimes in one day, that 12 can go from 120 to 3,000. How many of you believe that's still possible? See, can y'all organize El Paso? Can y'all get the word out all over Texas and help us now? You don't have to do it alone because people are listening now. We're going everywhere. Let's do this, y'all. Let's have a transformative generational event. The Congress did it, started on the policy. Now let's make the policy live by deciding we ain't going to talk no more so much about what other folk going to do. There comes a time in your history you got to decide, what are you going to do? And there are more of us. They just got to be waking up. They're dry bones. They just need to be waking, shaking. There's an army rising. There's an army rising. And we're going to do it together. Turn to your neighbor and say, neighbor. Now look at him real good. Say, neighbor, you got to do this with me. Say, we had more. Say, we got more right now than Jesus has. We got more right now than David had. We got more right now than Harriet Tubman had. Y'all understand what I'm trying to say? We got more right now than Cesar Chavez had. Cesar Chavez didn't start out. It was about a group maybe smaller than this. Am I right, Fernando Cesar Chavez, when he took on? But it's always when a few decide to make it better for the many that many of the many hear the call. Let's call them, y'all. Let's challenge these political systems. And it's already working. You hear the candidates now talking about poverty. They weren't talking about poverty before. They weren't talking about systemic racism. I heard today that Cory Booker and Omar introduced a bill that says everybody that wants a job, we're going to get a job. That's an idea that goes all the way back to the original Poor People's Campaign and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. I'm telling you, all we got to do is stay with this. And we may not see everything in our lifetime, but we'll see a beginning of something that will change things for a lifetime. Come on. Come on. Rise. Rise. There's an army. Rise. See you Wednesday.
Somebody's hand. It's the same energy that we started out with. There's an army rising up. There's an army rising up. There's an army rising up to break every chain, break every chain, break every chain. Break every chain, break every chain, break every chain. There's an army rising up. There's an army rising up.
Break every chain, break every chain,
break every chain,
break every chain,
break every chain. There's an army rising up.
There's an army rising. Chain, break every chain. One more time, it'll break every chain. Break every chain. Break every chain.
Oh yeah.
It'll break every chain. Break every chain. Break every the chains of poverty, the chains of discrimination. Break every chain. Break every chain. Break every the chains of inequality, the chains of racism. Break every chain. Break every chain. Break every chain.
Break every chain. Break every chain. Break every So everybody, on that note, we want to go out in that mindset as the musician plays, and we want to kind of file out on that. Can we do that? Can we carry this spirit as we leave tonight? And if you want to hum it on the way out, that's all right. We love you all.